Welcome to episode 118 of the Headspace and Timing podcast. Today, I have a dual military couple on the show to talk about a great initiative, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. As this episode is going live on the Thursday before Memorial Day, I couldn't think of a better way to recognize Memorial Day than to have Rod and Kelly Rodriguez on the show.
You know, this memorial will capture that. You know, one of the questions we ask, someone stands before this memorial, what do you want to feel? What do you want people to feel? This young soldier who had never deployed, this soldier said something. He was a young kid. He was like 20 years old, maybe 21. He's the same age as my son. And he was very deep in thought. And we had, you know, we go around discussing. He goes, you know, I want people to feel safe. I want people to stand before this memorial and realize that there are men and women willing to stand up to serve and protect. And I was like blown away. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. He saw something more. He saw the empowerment piece within this memorial. He saw the strength and might behind just being a damn American. You know, he saw that in his speech to the American people and who is willing to step up and serve. And service comes in so many shapes and forms.
Kelly, who's also a veteran, hopes that the memorial will educate those who haven't served about the real nature of the people who serve in the armed forces rather than what people think we are.
The idea that every soldier, every service member is a warfighter, and the fact that they're like Michael said, hunting down bad guys. And it's, you know, I don't know what the number is exactly, but it's something like 20 to 1. So, you know, for every gunslinger, so to speak, there's somebody supporting it. There's somebody sending bullets. There's somebody sending food. There's somebody driving it. There's a medic somewhere. You know, there's somebody working the radios. There's so many more things that happen in the military. And again, it's that misunderstanding I think we have. But I think that's an important part to tell too. It's not everybody just shooting bad guys. It's, you know, our military is way stronger and way smarter than that.
Before we kick off the interview, I'd like to bring you a quick message from Dr. Barbara Van Dalen, founder and president of Given Hour, about an event that's coming up June 9th through the 15th.
I'm Dr. Barbara Van Dalen, founder and president of Given Hour and the Campaign to Change Direction. We want everyone to join us the second week of June for a week to change direction and the Change Direction Jam. Together, we're changing the culture of mental health. Events during the week can happen anywhere and everywhere. We're so excited to work with IBM to create this global discussion. Mark your calendar, register, and join us to change direction. Go to changedirection.org. That's changedirection.org to learn more.
Here at Headspace and Timing, we'll be joining Given Hour during that week. The podcast episode that week will be with Dr. Van Dalen, and that week's blog post is going to focus on the Campaign to Change Direction. Longtime listeners will know that our mission is to change the way that we think and talk about veteran mental health, and the Campaign to Change Direction is doing exactly that. Make sure to check them out at changedirection.org. Welcome to the Headspace and Timing podcast, a show dedicated to breaking down the stereotypes around veteran mental health. My name is Dwayne France, and I'm a retired Army non-commissioned officer and a combat veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan. After retiring from the Army, I took on a new mission as a clinical mental health counselor for my fellow service members. If you served in any branch of the military, then you're familiar with the M2 machine gun, the 50 cal. It's one of the most effective weapons in the military's arsenal. If the weapon's headspace and timing wasn't set correctly, however, it was just a useless chunk of metal. Veterans can be rendered inoperable if their headspace and timing's not set correctly either. That's my goal with this show, to change the way that we think and talk about veteran mental health and reduce the stigma against seeking support. Each week, we'll talk with mental health professionals, veterans, and those who support service members, veterans, and their families. We're going to have real and honest conversations about a topic that most just don't like to talk about, veteran mental health. Let's jump into this week's conversation. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Headspace and Timing podcast once again. And as always, I really appreciate you taking the time to listen and learn about veteran mental health. Those longtime listeners know that when I say veteran mental health, I'm not talking about broken veterans. I'm not talking about crazy, and I'm not always talking about PTSD. There's so much more that goes into mental and psychological health and wellness than just what many people think they think about veteran mental health. And so today, as we are approaching Memorial Day, I was really excited to bring on my guests today because it very much does bring a issue that's close to my heart personally, and I think one that's really close to the heart of the nation. So my guests today are Mike and Kelly Rodriguez, or Rod, as he likes to be called. And they're with the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation, among many other things. Mike and Kelly, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dwayne, I really appreciate you having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, I appreciate you taking the time. Definitely, and again, as we talked a little bit briefly before we started, we'll get into the Global War on Terrorism, the memorial. But before we do that, I'd like to give each of you an opportunity to give a little bit of your backgrounds and sort of how you got to the Memorial Foundation, where you're at now.
All right. Well, being a gentleman and married as long as I have and loving this lady as much as I do, I'm going to allow her to go first.
Okay. Well, I'm involved with the foundation primarily because of Michael. But background on me, I retired about a year and a half ago after 21 years in the Army. And I deployed 6 times. 3 of those were combat tours, in support of the Global War on Terrorism. Of course, married to a combat veteran. Our son is a combat veteran. So the memorial, I just really help Michael where he needs me. But it's super important, not just for our family, but for all those that I served with as well. It's going to be a really important place of healing.
Okay. My turn. All right. my name is Michael Rodriguez, you can go by Rod. Pretty much anyone that serves in the military goes by Rod. It's on our last name, it was on our name page. They called Kelly Mama Rod. My father was Rod in Vietnam. Both my grandparents are Rodriguez's on both sides. We're called Rod in World War II. And my son, who's a paratrooper in the 82nd Airborne, gets called Little Rod sometimes, but he's a lot bigger and smarter than me, so kind of bothers him a bit. But I served for 21 years in the Army. I was, blessed with that opportunity. Retired a little, almost 6 years ago. I've been out for a while. Married to, I've deployed 9 times during my 21 years of service, married to an active duty service member as well. She served 21 years, I think, because we're a pretty competitive family. I did 21, so she didn't want to, be like I had more years than her. So she served 21 years as well. We're both retired as senior NCOs. Our son, we're proud to say he took on that, role within the family business, and he joined the Army right after graduating high school. Poor kid, he grew up in Fayetteville. I've been at Fort Bragg since 97, spent the majority of my career here at Fort Bragg, so he grew up here in Fayetteville, graduated high school here in Fayetteville, joins the Army, he's 82nd Airborne, 2 + 2 = 4, so he's stationed here in Fayetteville at Fort Bragg. We're fortunate, and one of the things that I chose to do when I retired was to try and find find a way to continue to serve. Because I was medically retired after 21 years for multiple traumatic brain injuries as well as post-traumatic stress. I went through that journey that pretty much everybody goes through when they transition. And I gravitated towards service and volunteering my time in a nonprofit. And over the years, I've been blessed to have the opportunity to, build a friendship and help and work with our 43rd Commander in Chief, President George W. Bush. He's a friend of mine, but I was trying to guide his strategic vision on how to better serve post 9/11 veterans and their families at depth for a few years. And then now I'm currently the president and CEO of the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation, which is the congressionally designated nonprofit that has the blessed mission to build a national Global War on Terrorism memorial in our nation's capital.
And that's great. It is hard to sum up a quarter century in about 5 minutes, of course, for both of you. And you sound a little surprised that you realize that you've been out for 6 years. And it does. It goes by in a blink of an eye. And then Kelly, of course, having recently retired, a mentor of mine once asked me after I'd been out 3 years, how long you've been out. And I told him, and he was like, you still have sand behind your ears, right? This is a long, long time. We're going to be veterans at least 2 or 3 times longer, than we were in the service. And it sounds, and this is one of the things that I really appreciate about veterans, especially senior NCOs and senior officers that get out when they have this legacy of leadership, that they want to, continue to serve. and how the two of you are serving now with the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. Kelly, you had mentioned how important this is going to be for the nation.
Yeah. I think only people that have, you know, maybe gone through war and not had a place of healing would understand that. But, you know, if you look at the things that happened after the Vietnam War, Vietnam Wall was put up, you know, it served such a purpose for not just the veterans, but for their families as well, for the families of those that didn't come home. And so it's just, you know, no other thing, nothing else can really bring that closure to people. And, you know, this war it's been going on a long time. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get to talk about the changes that had to be made to law, actually, because it's just we don't know when it's going to end, and we don't want to be that generation of veterans that never has that place to go, you know, to go visit and to say goodbye to our friends and to heal our hearts and also to educate people about, you know, what the war is. It's been going on so long, young people really don't know. It's all they know, but they really don't know what it is.
No, you're absolutely right, and especially about the place of healing. Of course, Rod, like you had said, my father, three of my uncles were Vietnam veterans, and I very clearly recall when I was about 14 years old when they had the traveling wall come around. So this is about the mid-80s, and this is when President Reagan, you know, came out and said, we finally need to welcome them home. And many of the Vietnam veterans really felt that this was their homecoming. I at that event, it was it was the traveling wall. It was come through Missouri. And then they had a welcome home party or something afterwards. And my uncle turned to me and he said, this is my welcome home. And it was nearly 20 years. It was 18 years after both my father and my uncle had deployed. And it was a healing process. And then later on, I actually visited the wall, took a rubbing for a neighbor of my father and my uncle's, who had died in Vietnam. And so that, like you said, this is a generational thing. The unique thing though, Rod, and you can speak to this, and Kelly had alluded to it, in that there was a certain rule that there needed to be a certain amount of time between the ending of the conflict and the erection of the memorial.
Yeah, that's true. So a lot of people don't realize the very first like national war memorial we ever had was in the fall of 1982, and that was the Vietnam Wall. You know, when Jan Scruggs decided to do that, you know, then we didn't have anything like that. So aside, and it speaks to, you know, the vision and strength of the Vietnam Veteran Memorial Foundation actually make that happen. So that happened in 1982. So in 1986, you know, that's when Congress and our, you know, everyone in D.C., they're like, oh, my gosh, well, we need to set up some laws and rules for this. So there's something that was in 1986, there's something called the Commemorative Works Act of 1986. And in that, as federal law, and in there, it said a war had to be over for a period of 10 years, for a national war memorial to be built. Now, personally, I don't think that was a good idea in 1986. It's darn sure not a good idea now. We mentioned earlier that our son is an 82nd Airborne. We welcomed him home from his first deployment last year, which is the 16th deployment for my family. But, you know, we are in a multi-generational conflict with no end in sight. So if we really, like, just followed that federal law or the mandate, we would probably never have one, or at least the first generation of the warfighters in the global war on terrorism would never get the memorial. And we wanted to avoid what happened to the greatest generation, you know, who never got to see the World War II memorial built, you know, which is, in my opinion, it's a tragedy. So we did that in 2017. We introduced a House resolution that passed unanimously through the House and Senate in 6 months, bipartisan support. And that's when we were, as a foundation, were officially handed the mission to build. We're congressionally designated, you know, you guys are the ones that are going to build it, and you're exempt from the Commemorative Works Act that stated a war had to be over for a period of 10 years because, you know, it just doesn't make sense. You know, we are fighting waging a war with no precedents. We're fighting it like we've never had to fight it before. And so this memorial that we're building really has no precedents. So we're doing something, you know, that's never been done before, which is pretty exciting and scary at the same time.
But it's you know, I feel it's a sacred duty that we all share. So there's a lot going on. You know, and Dwayne, I want to thank you, you know, on your podcast for taking part. So one of the things that we did in the foundation was last year we had to go from the idea phase in 2017. We're like, all right, hey, you guys can do it. It's like, oh my gosh, well now we have action. So in 2018, the foundation took some direction. And that's when we sat down. We're like, all right, well, we need to figure out what this memorial is going to say. What's it going to do? How's it going to, what does it mean? You know, and, you know, I felt that, look, it would be short-sighted and even arrogant for us as a foundation to think we knew everything. You know, we don't know. We were developing our program. So what we did was we conducted discussion groups across the country. And again, I thank you, Dwayne, for taking part of it. They were focused discussion groups, and we wanted to talk to everybody, the people of America, because this memorial really belongs to the people of America. So we spoke to people that serve. We spoke to their family members. We spoke to Gold Star family members. We spoke to currently serving members. We spoke to people that never served, which is important, because right now at any given time, 1%, give or take, is actually wearing the uniform of our nation. So we wanted to speak to those that didn't serve or didn't even know anyone served. We also spoke to faith leaders in the three largest religions within this country, which are Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. So we wanted to talk to the faith leaders. What would it mean to you? So we did this, and it was really refreshing when we synthesized all the data and brought everything together. It was phenomenal, and I shouldn't use the word refreshing. It was actually very it was a special moment, at least it was for me, in that whether someone served or didn't serve, or they knew someone that served, or they actually had a loved one that was lost in the global war on terrorism, everybody said almost the same thing, particularly with location, where they want it and what it should say, you know, which speaks to us as a nation. It speaks to us as American, by the people of America. You were the American people. We're a broad tapestry of backgrounds and, you know, everything. We're so different from, you know, with who we are individually, but we're still the American people. And it was very overwhelming, that consensus that everybody wants this memorial to be built in the reserve, which is what people consider the mall in Washington, D.C., which we received that direction. So you're the first, this first time I'm sharing it publicly, is we are going to be seeking legislation, because we have to pass legislation to allow us to build in the reserve, because Congress deemed the reserve closed. There can't be anything else in there. But we're listening to the American people. It's not the foundation deciding to do this. It's the foundation listening to the American people. So that's very exciting news, and that's kind of the status and direction of the foundation, where we're going. You know, it's a very dynamic environment, but we're very excited.
You know, that is amazing news. And bold and decisive action is always important, and we're not going to back. It's not even going to be a fight, but it's the way that it is. As you mentioned, I was involved in the in some of the screening in the polls there in the focus groups, and I didn't choose the reserve because I was in my mind, well, it's closed, right? It's closed, and you can't do it, but. But the fact is that that's where a lot of people want it. And for those listeners who may not be familiar with the nomenclature, but this is the broad park and strip that's between the state cap or between the Capitol building and the Washington Monument, the reflecting pool. It's in the area with the rest of the monuments, the Vietnam, Korea, and World War II and things like that. Correct?
Yes, exactly. If you were to draw across from the White House to the Jefferson, and then from Lincoln to the U.S. Capitol, that's the reserve. You know, there are other areas, you know, Area 1, Area 2, not to go into all that. But, and everyone that took part, they understood that. We educated everyone, hey, this is what this means, this is where that goes. And, you know, we take direction. That's why, and if the vast majority of people would have said, we don't care, or put it in Area 1, or put it in Area 2, put it across the river, you know, that's the direction we would take. But, you know, we listened to everybody. What was really awesome was, so we culminated these discussions here at Fort Bragg. It was command sponsored, Forcecom. Sergeant Major Grinston, Sergeant Major at Forcecom is a friend. We went, you know, through all open channels and did it the right way. So we culminated 3 days of discussions here at Fort Bragg with peer groups. So in the morning it was junior enlisted,
junior NCOs, senior NCOs, senior officer, field grades, command teams, and et cetera. So we had several different discussion groups. And over the course of those 3 days, we spoke with 65 active duty service members, which represented almost 800 years of service and almost 200 cumulative deployments. And, you know, just from that small group alone, and, you know, I can't think of a more credible source to me than those that are actually still fighting in the war.
Right. And that's, as you were talking, that just struck me is, of course, as the Korean War and Vietnam and the World War II Memorial, which is the three largest that are currently in place. Of course, the Desert Storm Memorial, I think, is going to be placed adjacent to the Lincoln Memorial. This is the first time that individuals who are still serving in the particular conflict are being allowed to or being able to have input on the memorial that's going to honor their service.
Exactly. That's why it's such a, we're doing something that's never been done before. It's so unique. And again, I keep saying it's a little bit scary. It's a lot of responsibility, but you know, we're just, you know, I consider it a blessing to have the opportunity to work on this project.
And of course it means so much to those of us who served. And as you'd mentioned, it is a family affair. You called it a family business. But some of our most senior leaders at the beginning of the global war on terror, they were Vietnam era, right? You know, they had enlisted in the or were appointed in the early 70s. Then, of course, you have perhaps our generation, you know, Rod and Kelly and myself. And then, of course, our children. You know, you mentioned your son is in, my son was born 1 month before 9/11. He turns 18 this August and could enlist in the military and fight in the same war that I fought in. This past September 11th or September 12th specifically is the first time someone could join the military who had not been born when the cause of the war started. And so we don't know, you know, we talk about it, we just recently lost the last of Doolittle's Raiders. The final veteran of the global war on terror likely has not enlisted and hopefully has already been born, but maybe not.
No, you're 100% right. You know, we have no idea. And you, it's such a broad group, and this is the longest war this country has ever been in. And it's so broad. So you spoke to the very first generation of warfighters. So I'm fortunate to have as one of my mentors, you know, and I was blown away that he actually joined the foundation, our board of advisors. But General Peter Pace, he was 16th Chairman, Joint Chief of Staff. He's a Vietnam veteran himself. He was platoon leader of the Marines, deployed to Vietnam, became the Chairman, Joint Chief of Staff, and is a global war on terrorism veteran himself. You know, he's also a Desert Storm veteran. So, you know, we have these gentlemen and ladies that are so senior, but, you know, they deserve their place. They deserve this, in my opinion.
And this is, and definitely, Kelly, having served yourself, when we talk about, you know, like General Pace being a multi-war vet, you know, we're multi-war vets, but it's multi-theater. It's simultaneous. It's not consecutive. Right. And that makes a difference. On your family, on my family, my wife and I just passed 20 years, and she was with me 4 out of my 5 deployments. This monument is going to be unique because the spouses served right along with the service members and the children served.
Right, that's something else that makes the Global War on Terrorism Memorial different is. It's going to recognize that. It's going to recognize not just those that didn't come home. It's going to recognize, you know, we have contractors that are still getting killed in action. We have, you know, we have Gold Star, you know, spouses whose children are still serving in combat, you know, that they've already lost their husband and yet they send their son or daughter to war. And it's something the foundation has taken notice of, and it's going to be addressed. It's going to be recognized.
Yeah, without a doubt. Like I mentioned it earlier, you know, we're waging conflict in a type of war that has no precedent. So this memorial has no precedent, which is why we're being as inclusive as possible. We are. We're going to recognize everyone that served, too, particularly the family component as well, because within the 16 deployments that I had, the most difficult for me were not my nine. It was the seven, watching my loved ones go off to war, you know, and to the multi-generational, you know, like gold stars that we have. You know, one of my best friends, you know, Mike Duskin, was killed in 2010. Maggie, she's actually one of our ambassadors to the foundation. Both her sons are currently serving. Both her sons, you know, are global war on terrorism veterans. As a matter of fact, her youngest son enlisted not long after his father was killed. Another family, the Vimoto family, Isaiah Vimoto, retired as 18th Airborne Corps, Command Sergeant Major. Isaiah is a phenomenal, I mean, that whole family, he's a close friend of ours. Isaiah lost his son while he was the Brigade Sergeant Major, and continued to serve. And guess what else? His daughter's serving. And right now his son is a contractor serving in Afghanistan. That's the fifth member of the Vimoto family that is deployed in support and serving in the global war on terrorism. So that's why we are recognizing the services and sacrifices of everybody war has touched.
I mean, with that one, Mrs. Vimoto, while she's never worn a uniform, I mean, I don't know if it gets much harder than that. You know, your husband, your son, your daughters, her entire family has served in this war. Deployed, which is, it's just amazing. And she's got to be just one of the strongest people ever for that.
And the two of you bring up a very good point in that, and we've mentioned it a couple times, but it's a family affair. Again, two of my grandfathers, World War II, of course, we didn't know it because they didn't talk about it. And I was in the 82nd, and I'd gone back home, and my stepfather's father, so my grandfather on that side, we were sitting in the living room, and of course everyone had left, and it was just he and I. And he started asking, I'd already been to Germany once, and he asked me where I was, and then he started telling me stories about how when he was in France and changing road signs and messing with, and I was like, wait a minute, you were. You know, in D-Day, and he was like D+1, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. And of course I grew up with him. My father and three of my uncles, not necessarily, we didn't grow up in the military. All of them had gotten out after one or two tours. But then myself and my younger brother, are both OIF and OEF veterans. The Vimoto family, your family, it's increasingly, it's the 1%, but it's increasingly the 1% that's multi-generational within the family. It truly is becoming a family business, which removes service even more from those who haven't served.
No, you're right. If you look at the statistics, depending on what it is, you know, and the ones that I've read kind of tend to these numbers. So during World War II, we had about 11% of the population served. During Korea, it was about 7%. Even during Vietnam, we had 4%. And you heard me mention, at any given time, like current, you have about the entire force is at or less than 1% of the United States population. And if you add up all of the veterans, of course, it's more than 1%. But, you know, it is increasingly becoming a more, it is a family affair, you know. And does that mean we as a nation are creating somewhat of a warrior caste? I don't know. I think that could be a completely separate podcast, you know. Right. But you know, really, it speaks to the disconnect that we have with the veteran population and the civilian population. Like, there's that narrative that's tossed around the civilian military divide. I throw the BS flag on that all the time. You know, when General Pace came home from Vietnam, when my father came home from Vietnam, when your family came home from Vietnam, that was a civilian-military divide. What we have today is a misunderstanding. So the fact we have such a small percentage serving, you know, I think speaks to that, which is why another reason why this memorial is so damn important. You know, we have four tenets that we, you know, last year we were like, we need to refine our messaging and figure out what it is. And based off the stuff, so we have four tenets that we're going to follow. The first one is honor. And we kind of talked about that one. We're going to honor the service and sacrifices of everyone, everybody, to the family component, to the contractors. In January of this year, we lost seven Americans in the global war on terrorism. Three of them were contractors. One of them happened to be one of my best friends, a guy named Rick Rodriguez. You know, the war is increasingly touching such a small percentage. So we're going to honor the service sacrifice of everybody. The second tenet, and we talked about, is heal. We're going to heal as a nation. And this is where I think we're going to heal as a nation. Not that I think there's that divide or you know, civilians versus military or anything quite like that. But, you know, we're going to heal that relationship. And sometimes relationships always, you need to focus on relationships in order, if you want to maintain them and have them grow. So that's going to provide us an opportunity to heal, not just those of us that were personally touched by the global war on terrorism, but the entire nation. The third tenet is empower through education and engagement. That's what we're going to do. We're going to have these tough discussions, but not just those of us that are having these discussions, like, you know, the three of us on this call right now, or everybody listening that has a direct connection to it, but also our leaders. You know, there's certain discussions that need to be had. We need to educate and empower, you know, we need to educate everybody through engagement. Certain discussions need to be had, you know, and I think it'll make the country a better place. And the fourth tenet that we're following is unite. Now, I have to constantly remind people that this memorial is not a 9/11 memorial. There are over 70 9/11 memorials that exist within the continental United States, and about a dozen that exist, believe it or not, outside our borders, which is phenomenal. The most impactful for me are the ones at the Pentagon, the field in Shanksville, and the one in New York City at Ground Zero. But they're all phenomenal. And while, you know, on that day of 9/11, you know, everyone has a story, and I really love to hear people tell their stories, you know, and I've even noticed children telling their parents' story because they don't remember it. And even the child is that's telling their parents' story that they've heard their parent relay a number of times, they're touched by it. They're passionate. They're speaking with conviction and emotion. So on that day, while the entire nation, even the world, mourned the losses of the thousands of innocents that we lost to those cowardly attacks, what's the one thing this nation did? What was our nation's immediate response to those events? We united. And that's why this, our fourth tenet is unite. We're going to remind everybody on that day, we weren't a people of color or religion or sexuality or any whatever social label we, you know, people choose to take on these days. We were the American people. You know, and that's why our fourth tenet is unite. That's what this memorial is going to capture is what this nation is. It's going to show the strength and unity of this nation in spite of what people see on the news or hear or think. You know, really at the heart of this nation, we're still the American people, which, you know, I talked about briefly a little while ago when we went over those results from the discussion groups and the survey that we sent out. It was a special moment for me because it reminded me that we are still the American people and we're doing the right thing. You know, so there's this memorial is going to impact and touch not just those of us that were directly impacted by the global war on terrorism, but the entire nation as a whole.
You know, as you were talking, I'm thinking, of course, and the two of you have really put a lot of thought into this, but you're absolutely right. You know, we have the Pearl Harbor National Memorial, the USS Arizona Memorial in Hawaii, and that commemorates that event. But that's not the World War II Memorial. And I'm a monument junkie. I've visited Gettysburg several times. I really enjoy.
Oh yeah.
One of the things in the East Coast is visiting all the Civil War battlefields, and there's something about visiting these places it's sacred, right? And many people say the same thing. Whether it's the way that the acoustics were designed at the Vietnam Memorial or whatever, but there is a different spirit there, if we could call it that. That's not commemorating any one particular event. And from what I'm gathering, that's the intent for the Global War on Terrorism Memorial, is to invoke that same feeling and really give that same message.
No, you're exactly right. You know, you're 100% right. And I've become a memorial junkie, obviously with the job. You know, I've always been in history, but you know, now we've been fortunate to have conversations with a lot of the other curators and executive directors of other foundations. You know, everyone's so friendly and welcoming and inviting. You know, we want to be sure that, you know, while even with, if anyone goes on our website, you know, and looks at the team, just go on there and look at the team, look at who's on the board, looks on our board of advisors, look at our board of directors. That is a very robust and very, very, pretty deep team of with experience and, you know, credibility. But even with that team, we understand we don't know everything, which is why we chose to do the discussion and talk to everybody else. Cause we believe everybody has input. You know, not everyone's going to agree. Of course not. That would be naive to think so, but you know, we want to be sure that it has that. And this memorial should be, and it will be, you know, something, it'll be an experience, and it's going to be a point of security, a point of healing. There's so many things that I really fully believe that, you know, this memorial is going to make the country better. And it's definitely going to make it better because it'll remind everybody who we are as the American people. You know, I think our strength lies in our diversity, in my opinion.
Yeah. That makes me think of something that I think a lot of people, you know, in the military, those sometimes in the military, we know this. We know that this is a very diverse country, and we know that, you know, we work well together, and our diversity makes us stronger because that's what the military is. You know, any unit in any service, it's a huge cross section from different countries even, but definitely different states, different backgrounds, different economic status, all of those things, and you just make it happen, and all of those differences make it stronger. But I don't know that all of America realizes that anymore. So it might give an opportunity to show that and share that, to remind everybody that our differences is what makes us so good.
You know, and we keep coming back to this this concept of healing, and it is healing. And I appreciate, Rod, how you had said healing for the relationships, right? It's healing whatever that gap or whatever that as you said, misunderstanding, but really that lack of education. But also healing for the individuals. Again, it was very, very fulfilling for me to visit the Vietnam Memorial for the first time and be able to do that for my father and my uncle. And it was me helping them heal. But you think about some, you know, young, well, no longer young, but some service member maybe spent 3 or 4 years and they felt, well, I was such a small cog in this huge machine. But this is also mine too. I mean, we're looking at honor flights to this memorial in 50 years because hopefully it's going to be done in 50 years. But we are 20 years probably or less than that, maybe even from the oldest veterans hitting 65, and probably 50 or 60 years from the youngest veterans of global war on terror in 65. And so this is going to be a long-lasting memorial for those individuals who are participating in the global war on terror to help them heal individually.
No, you're right. 100% right. I remember, you know, you talked about your experience at the Vietnam Wall. So the very first, you know, when you were a child, I remember it came and visited us as well. I'm from southern New Mexico. So I remember the traveling wall coming. And the very first time I had an opportunity to go to the actual wall in Washington, D.C., I went there. And we have a cousin on the wall. You know, he served the same time my father was serving, my father's cousin. And, you know, I'm looking at his pencil, you know, shape, his the pencil scraping right now. It's sitting right here in front of me in my study as we have this conversation. You know, he's on that wall. But I remember as a service member, as a combat veteran myself, I went there and I experienced it. And I was making the pencil shaving and, even though that he passed away, you know, unless he passed in Vietnam many decades prior, it provided an opportunity for me to think about those brothers and sisters of mine that I know that knew that never came home. So one of the things that it provides is it's not just for that community. You know, the Vietnam Wall provided something for all veterans, just like the World War II Memorial. They're a kinship, you know, and I really hope. One thing that kind of irks me sometimes is veterans identify themselves with their periods of service. And I think we're above that. I think we should be above that, you know, but that my experience at the Vietnam Wall, seeing my cousin on the wall, provided an opportunity for me to heal from a war that he died decades before, you know, before he even came into play. So one of the things too, I hope we're going to try and do is tell them, look, we're all veterans, we're all a family, we're all Americans, you know, and, you know, bring everyone together. Because really, that's one of the things, it drives me nuts when a veteran identifies themselves with their period of service and they feel that they don't have a kinship, you know, and I don't feel bad, but I almost, you know, for guys and gals that didn't deploy, that served between Desert Storm and the current conflict, you know, they're almost like, they almost feel bad for it. And I hope that they don't, you know, I hope they realize that they're still my brothers and sisters, whatever period they served, you know, just like, you know, my father is my fellow veteran, my grandfathers who are past are my fellow veterans, you know, that's one thing I really hope, you know, to drive home with the entire veteran community.
You know, and that's exactly right. A lot of the veterans that I work with, especially with mental health, and we know the statistics, it's the veterans 55 and older are the ones that are struggling the most with suicide. And those Cold War veterans do come into my office and say, I don't feel like a veteran. I don't consider myself a veteran. And I have to point out that I did this research once, and then in 1980, there were more active duty deaths than there were in 2010, and there were two wars going on in 2010. They didn't have safety officers in 1980, right? They didn't have but the military is an inherently dangerous occupation, and those the 10th group guys that started out in bad tolts and they were, you know, riding chutes, you know, into the ground, or those Navy aircraft that were doing surveillance and they were incursion, in danger close and hard. I mean, just that it's so, there's so many different things. Service is service. And you're right. And this idea of this is not just a global war on terror. This is not just a yours and mine and General Pace's and your son's, you know, in all of that. This is a memorial for all service members. And again, this idea of uniting, you know, I had a Dr. Ed Tick on the show back in episode 109 and 110, and he said something that struck me, and he had been working with Vietnam veterans since the mid-70s. And he said that a lot of people think that the military's job is to kill and destroy, but the military's job is really to preserve and protect. To preserve and protect our way of life and freedom, but even on the basic level, to preserve and protect our fellow service members and those that were charged with. And I could say arguably that's the goal of the Global War on Terror Memorial, is to preserve and protect the legacy that not just our current era, but to unite all service members into that legacy of service. Would that be accurate?
No, I agree. You know, I mean, that's our primary, you're right. He's Dr. Tick's right. He hit that nail right on the head. And that's one thing is to, you know, this memorial will capture that, you know, it'll show that. So during all the discussion groups, they were led by we had some project managers helping us out with this, but either myself or I was at the majority of them. Or another one of our board members was in attendance. Well, the last one we were doing here in Fort Bragg, there was a young soldier. And if you remember, Dwayne, you know, one of the questions we asked on this is, if someone stands before this memorial, what do you want to feel? What do you want people to feel? You know, and in this, you know, for people that are wondering, there's qualitative and quantitative data points that we drew from it. But this was obviously one of those. And this young soldier who had never deployed, he was an E3, and it was very important for us that we had soldiers that still had skin in the fight, whether they deployed or not. It doesn't matter. You know, they're gonna, it's going to happen. You know, you can't serve today and not go to war. That's not going to happen. If you do, you're trying. I'm going to say that, you know, live right now. Anyway, the soldier said something. He was a young kid. He was like 20 years old, maybe 21. He's the same age as my son. And he was very deep in thought. And we had, you know, we go around discussing, he goes, you know, I want people to feel safe. I want people to stand before this memorial and realize that there are men and women willing to stand up to serve and protect. Exactly what Dr. Tick said, you know, which I think is awesome. It's great how those things just kind of dovetail together. But that's what that kid said. And I was like blown away. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you're right. He saw something more. He saw the empowerment piece within this memorial. He saw the strength and might behind just being a damn American. You know, he saw that in his speech to the American people and who is willing to step up and serve. And service comes in so many shapes and forms. You know, not everybody has to serve this nation. Not everyone has to put on a uniform, pick up a gun and go into harm's way. There's so many other ways to serve this nation. You know, you can, and Dwayne, you're doing a phenomenal job of doing it right now. You're serving those that serve. I mean, it's great. I don't even, I can't, there's no better way to say that. But not everyone has to do that. And I remind people, I always get the patriotic American that did not join the military, almost feel remorseful or bad. And I always want to tell them, look, no, thank you for being you. Thank you for following the law, paying your taxes, being a good citizen, supporting the country, getting out and vote, you know, help your community, serve your community, do something. That's to me being a patriot, you know, and that speaks to who we are. I keep coming back to this, but it's really what it is. And I think people tend to forget it, but that's who we are as the American people. We serve others. We do. And that's what this war is. It's not a war of conquest. We're not planting a flag somewhere. You know, for those of us that have served, that have gone over there, you know, we are protecting liberty and freedom. You know, there's so much more that we're doing. You know, it's not just hunting down bad guys. I mean, we're good at it. I did a lot of it.
Mm-hmm,
and
we're
good at doing that. But, you know, I also was able to, you know, provide medical aid, as Kelly was, to, you know, children that probably would have died without it, you know, or just basic hygiene to women that are neglected in certain cultures, you know, to just help them live their life better and have more comfort in life. There's so much more to this than I think people that don't serve, that are stuck in their iPhones and, you know, their social media, and that's their world. But, you know, I think this will provide us an opportunity to educate everybody how much good we really are doing in the world.
I was just came to mind when you were talking, and actually when Michael did too, is the idea that every soldier, every service member is a war fighter, in the fact that they're like Michael said, hunting down bad guys. And it's, you know, I don't know what the number is exactly, but it's something like 20-1. So, you know, for every gunslinger, so to speak, there's somebody supporting it. There's somebody sending bullets. There's somebody sending food. There's somebody driving it. There's a medic somewhere. You know, there's somebody working the radios. There's so many more things that happen in the military. And again, it's that misunderstanding I think we have, but I think that's an important part to tell too. It's not everybody just shooting bad guys. It's, you know, our military is way stronger and way smarter than that. You know, I've told people, I was like, if I'm shooting my gun downrange, things are bad. Cause I was, you know, I was a medic, and I had to a couple times, and it was very, very scary, I'll be honest with you. But for me, I'm like, you know, my job was to take care of our guys and the bad guys. That was my job. I was on a surgical team. You know, I got to open a girls' school in Afghanistan. People don't know that those things happen. And I think that's another really important part of the story, is not everybody's over there. You know, not everybody's an infantryman, no matter how much you want to be, we're not. So,
Right. And that's more of the education piece. I when I was leading security escort patrols, I had two standing orders. The medic or the mechanic will not dismount unless I tell them to, because if either of you are needed, then we're in a pretty bad spot.
Things have gotten bad. Yeah.
Right. But this is the, and that's more of the education piece. And then, you know, Rod, going back to that young man, it's beautiful. Whatever else is, it's going to be. But this, I want people to feel safe, because monuments can make people feel different things. You know, the Vietnam Memorial, they describe it as this black gash in the ground, right? You know, it symbolizes something. A memorial can be intimidating, right? This is when, you know, the early designs of Washington, D.C. were to intimidate foreign individuals who were coming in. And we don't want the GWAP Memorial to be intimidating or recriminating or strike fear or be some angry fist in the sky. We want it to be inclusive and educational, and unite, like you said.
No, you're right. You're 100% right. You know, and it's very important, you know, and it speaks to, and I keep coming back to it, and I'm probably doing it for a reason, because I really hope people get that message. It's just who we are as a people, you know, whether someone served or didn't serve or whatever. And that's why it was so important for us to take direction from the American people, you know, and it's just America's response to some tragic events. And what does America do following tragic events? That's what we do, is we come together. You know, yeah, we bicker and fight and we don't always agree, but you know what? We're still the American people. And in times of crisis, we come together. And I really fully believe that's why our fourth tenet is unite. You know, is we want to remind America that, like, look, there's a lot of media out there. There's a lot of ways for you to get, you know, someone tell you something, their own opinion, and then all of a sudden you take it on your own or whatever. You know, I think people need to be reminded who we are as the American people.
Yeah, that's outstanding. I really appreciate both of you taking the time to come on the show. I'd like to give you each of you an opportunity, maybe some last thoughts.
Oh, I don't have any last thoughts.
Well, you right go now. First.
All right. We're going to argue about this one. I think for anybody that is listening, I do think that it's important to remind ourselves that, you know, and this is just speaking to the fact that this is mental health, you know, Veteran Mental Health Podcast. It's, you know, everyone has their struggles, and it takes a lot of courage to just stand up and say, you know what, I've been through some things, let's work on it. But it's not just a military thing. It's not just a veteran thing. It's a human thing. And, you know, we can live our best lives when we're working with other people and we're asking for help. And, you know, I've had to ask for help. And I just, you know, I just know that especially military folks, they just, you know, they feel like that's a sign of weakness. And once you actually get the help, you realize it's the biggest sign of strength. So I think that's, you know, that would be one thing that I'd really like to share.
Yeah, I'll kind of build on that. She kind of took the air out of my sails there. But no, so Kelly and I are very open about, you know, our service, obviously, but we're not ashamed of the fact that we both, the dynamic in our house is different, not special. So both Kelly and I have been in treatment, separate treatment facilities. Mine was a number of years before she went, but we've both been, you know, hospitalized for treatment and been in inpatient treatment facilities. And I'm not ashamed to say it. I was there for chemical dependency and post-traumatic stress. That's why I was there, and that's why I needed to be there. You know, I'm not ashamed to say that. Now, I was initially while I was there, and that was just the wrong way of feeling. You know, but that's just showing that I'm human. So I get calls all the time. You know, I speak to not just veterans dealing with post-traumatic stress, but, you know, post-traumatic stress is not a veteran issue. It's a human issue. You know, so I speak to a lot of first responders and just, you know, people living through life. You don't have to, you know, be a first responder or in the military to experience a traumatic event in your life. There's so many other ways to do that. So I speak openly about it, and I try to make people understand there's no difference. It's a human issue. You know, because I felt bad for feeling bad, which doesn't make sense. It really doesn't, you know, and it turns into this negative feedback loop where it just keeps getting worse. And, you know, I was fortunate and blessed to have a doctor, and he kind of gave me my asthma check that I needed when I needed it, you know. And, you know, if I didn't feel, and I got to a point where I stopped feeling, you know, and then he equated that. He's like, well, you know, if you felt bad for certain things, what if you didn't feel bad or you felt nothing? Then you'd be a sociopath. He goes, honestly, it's good to feel. That's called being a human. You know, you're not a robot. You're not a sociopath. You care. You're compassionate. You respect human life. He goes, that's good. That's actually, and just as Kelly said, that's a show of strength. The hardest three words I had to say was, I need help, you know, but, you know, it's the most important thing that any of us can do to do that. And I'm in a much stronger, I feel much stronger and safer now for being able to say that. Like I said, I'm not ashamed of it. I'm very open about it. You know, no one should ever be ashamed for feeling bad. No one should ever be ashamed for feeling sad or even angry. That's part of what makes us human.
And I think, and definitely having participated in the survey, is you can't tell this story without also telling that story. You can't tell the story of the global war on terror without acknowledging the danger of keeping these things to ourselves. And of course, it'll be interesting to see how it comes out in the memorial. But it is a very real, and everybody knows it, right? You know, the whole soldier's heart and shell shock and battle fatigue and all these other things before it became this term we have now, and then it'll merge into some other term. But it's all the same thing. It's a very human reaction to a human condition called war, but it doesn't mean it's a good or pleasant or enjoyable one. So I really appreciate both of you, not just for this, for the global war on terror, but also being honest and open about what you experienced, because the more often we talk about it, we can't change what we keep hidden.
You know, while there's a lot of awareness, we keep saying we need awareness. We have a lot. There's a lot of people that are aware of this problem, And I think we need to move past that awareness. I'm not saying just, okay, we checked that block, we're done. No, maintain the focus on that. But we need to transition from awareness to acceptance. That's where we need to go. That's the direction we need to go. There's awareness. There's so many dang nonprofits nowadays. Like, oh, I'm draining awareness. Man, we have awareness. Let's start moving towards acceptance. Let's make it people feel okay to feel like this. You know, I hope no one takes this wrong. Like, oh, Rod says we all know about it. No, we still need to talk about it, but we need to transition and start focusing towards acceptance.
Right. Awareness and then acceptance. And then after acceptance, we need to take action, because if we're still talking about it 5 years from now, the numbers haven't changed since 2015. And especially, and we're talking the suicide numbers, and this is where I'm definitely at, but you know, it's sort of like fighting a battle with, you know, intelligence that's 2 or 3 years old. But if we look at the numbers in 2015 and we're still doing the same things we were doing in 2015 and the numbers didn't change then, we're not going to expect them to change today. So I appreciate that, of course, to move into action. So if people wanted to find out more, you know, donations are always appreciated, right? Put some funds in the tip jar. You know, how can people find out maybe each of you, if you have maybe social media you want to put out there, or the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation?
Sure. Just, you know, www.gwatmf.org is the website, or just look us up, Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation on Facebook, Instagram at GWOTMF, at Twitter at GWOTMF. I think I'm kind of easy to find on social media, on Michael Rodriguez, or I think, what was my Instagram?
Monsters.
My Instagram is Monsters Dad. So this is funny, quick story. So I have three sons and a grandson now. And when my first son was born, I called him my monster. So I ended up calling my kids my monsters. And so I ended up getting an email, Monsters Dad. So monster, yes. Anyway, so too, yeah, just monsters. And people, what I would really like is if someone can, you know, donate, of course. I mean, we're a nonprofit. No one takes a salary. You know, I've been doing this for free for over 3 years now, I think, almost 3 years. It's the importance of the mission is if they can, but just as important, if not more important, talk about it, you know, reach out. You know, we don't have a big staff. You send me an email. If you send an email, chances are you're going to hear back from me. So talk about it, have these discussions. And really we need help with awareness would really, really help us.
Yeah. That's the same thing. Just, let people know that it's actually happening. Because a lot of people don't. I think that's the biggest thing.
No, absolutely. I'll make sure that all of those links are in the show notes and people can get a hold of you. Rod, Kelly, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
No, Dwayne, I really appreciate it, you know, and like I told you before we started recording, man, I came on here because of you, bro. I came here when you reached out to me. I was humbled to accept the invite, but really I'm here to support you. I mean, that's what it is. I didn't come in here to talk about anything that we're doing. It's just I'm here to support you because I don't think people realize that more lives are saved here at home than they are in a battlefield. And you're doing a fantastic job of it, Dwayne. I'm really proud of you.
I appreciate that. You're listening to Headspace and Timing, where we're trying to change the way that we think and talk about veteran mental health. I'm glad to have been able to bring the concept of the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation to the show. As you can hear, both Rod and Kelly are passionate not just about their family's service, but about developing the legacy for all of those who served. Even the fact that they will have to go back to Congress and get legislative change to allow the memorial to be built on the reserve, along with the other memorials, will be a way to have a discussion about how we're still in the longest era of sustained conflict in U.S. history. If you've never been to Washington, D.C. and seen the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials, then you're missing a moving and powerful experience. Visiting the World War II memorial, you will likely see honor flight recipients, veterans who were flown to D.C. specifically to visit the World War II memorial. Honor flights are bringing Korean War and Vietnam War veterans to visit their memorials as well. That's what's going to happen with the GWAT memorial. Someday, God willing, there's going to be a 73-year-old Dwayne France taking an honor flight to visit the memorial with his grandchildren, and we'll be able to talk about a critical era in our nation's history. It's going to happen, and it starts now, with Rod and Kelly, with me, and with you. To support the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation, go to gwattmemorialfoundation.org. Thanks for taking the time to check us out. If you want to find the show notes for this episode, go to veteranmentalhealth.com/HST118. We're always looking for guests. You can drop me a line at info@veteranmentalhealth.com to recommend guests. You can go to veteranmentalhealth.com/guest to fill out a suggestion or request. Our thanks this month go to Give an Hour and the Campaign to Change Direction. Don't forget, we'll be joining them for the Week to Change Direction from June 9th through the 15th. If you want to see how you can too, go to changedirection.org.
A Week to Change Direction will happen anywhere and everywhere people and organizations want to be part of this change. Give an Hour will provide toolkits with suggestions and ideas for how you or your organization can participate in a Week to Change Direction, or you can create your own.
Just a reminder that the guests and information on this show are for educational purposes only and not meant to be considered professional advice. While I'm a therapist, I'm not your therapist. Something you've heard makes you think that you should talk to somebody, then reach out to do so. I'd like to thank Doc Todd for giving us permission to use his track Not Alone from his album Combat Medicine. Doc's trying to bring the discussion about veteran mental health out of the darkness, and you can see all of his work at therealdoctodd.com. Be on the lookout for another great episode, and until then, remember, veterans, you're not alone. Ever.
The struggle is real, found a feast and lost a soul. Eventually my drinking, it got out of control. There in darkness I roam, struggling to find home. See, suddenly death didn't feel so alone. 22 a day, destination unknown. It could have been avoided if you picked up the phone, but now you're gone, so I guess all we get is the tone. Nothing but bone weeds, overgrown, pushing up stones. I've triumphed over enemies, co-creating enemies. Broke out facilities that tried to put an end to me. R.I.P. I'd rather grind in tranquility. Authentic tendency, embrace my ability. Take those bottles out, dog, and pour them in the sink. Take the needles out your arm and the gun away from your forehead. It's time, man, you've been through enough pain. Stand up. It's time to stand back up. All my veterans, man, Army, Marine Corps, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard. Get up, you know.